Welcome to Inside the Hut. I'm your host, Brooke Pollock, founder of Hut Capital. Inside the Hut is a podcast that talks with leading blockchain venture capital investors to dive deep into their firm, strategy, and approach to a complex space at the forefront of innovation. You can find this and other episodes on Spotify and other podcast players, or on our website at www.hutcapital.com. The content of each episode of Inside the Hut is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as legal, business, tax, or investment advice, or be used to evaluate any investment or security and is not directed at any investors or potential investors in any Hut Capital fund. Please note that Hut Capital and its affiliates may also maintain or be considering investments in or related to the companies, funds, assets, or strategies discussed in the podcast. For more details, including a link to our investments and related disclosures, please see www.hutcapital.com. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside the Hut with your host, Brooke Pollock. This week, we have with us Regan Bozeman, co-founder of Lattice, an early stage blockchain venture capital firm. Thank you so much for joining us, Regan.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
All right. So to get started, we'd love just to hear more about yourself, your background, how you got to where you are today with Lattice, and we can go from there.
I grew up in New York, and then I came out to San Francisco about 8 years ago, which kind of like starts my journey into crypto. So I moved out for a job working on the deal team at AngelList. If people aren't familiar, they've sort of built this like capital marketplace of capital going into early stage startups. And so I was sort of working on the deal team that like helped that marketplace run smoothly. And then we spun out a crypto company called CoinList to basically build a similar business around primary capital formation in crypto in the summer of 2017. And I jumped over as the first employee to that. I knew nothing about crypto at the time. I didn't know what an ERC-20 token was, but some of the smartest people I had worked with at AngelList were leaving to start CoinList, and it just seemed like there was a lot more opportunity to innovate in capital markets and crypto. And so I spent about 4 years there, mostly running the token sales business, worked with a lot of the large layer one blockchains, Solana, Filecoin, near bringing those protocols to market. Alongside that, started doing some angel investing, helped build a fundraising data business on the side called Dove Metrics, which we sold to Messari about 2 years ago. It was just doing a bunch of things in crypto, a lot of really around either helping early stage founders or bringing protocols to market, explaining technical concepts in ways that larger audience could get excited about them. And all of those things converged into Lattice, which we started about 2.5 years ago.
Dove Metrics used to be one of my favorite products, I guess. It was free and had a lot of deal information in terms of crypto startup deals. Was that just too much to manage alongside doing Lattice, or what made you guys want to do that in terms of selling it versus continuing to manage it?
We played around with kind of ideas of how could that fit under the Lattice brand or like help us build out the firm. And I think really just came to the idea that this fundraising data business being under an umbrella of someone who did early stage capital, it kind of should just be at like a data provider neutral party. And for us, Dove Metrics was always a side focus. And so I think someone like Messari that had a lot of expertise in building out a crypto data business, it was just a much better home. We've tried to be 101% focused on Lattice since day one. And I think slowly shifting away from all the other things we were doing in the space, that's kind of been part of that journey.
I think you were part of a group, for lack of a better word, called Free Company prior to Lattice. What was that?
My investing journey in crypto, there were two chapters before Lattice, and I kind of think of Lattice as the third. The first was just angel investing. And so I started working in the space and started meeting interesting founders. I really had very little money at the time. Being an angel investor, investing in startups always seemed like exciting to me. And so I started making some really small angel checks and was fortunate that I met the OpenSea founders really early on. The Dune Analytics founders were some of the first friends I made in crypto. I was just fortunate to cross paths with some really smart people and back some of them really early on. The second chapter is Free Company, which was basically a syndicate of people operating in crypto who are also doing angel checks. And our thinking at the time was really that the sum would be greater than the parts. None of us were writing huge checks. And the idea was really we could share deal flow. And if we put our checks together, we could size up and be like a more meaningful part of rounds. That was really like the thinking behind that. And we started that vehicle in mid-2020. And it worked really well for like 6 or 9 months. We did some awesome investments out of that vehicle, like Yield Guild, Axie Infinity, Audius, a bunch of other companies that have done really well. But once the bull market like really started in full swing, allocations to get cut back, everyone had more money, even like trying to coordinate a call with people on different time zones, founders were like, this is happening. You can either say you want to invest now or you can go off into the sunset. But no, I'm not waiting 3 days to coordinate a call with people on different time zones. The model basically broke and we wound that down. That was the second inning. And then the third was really, I think we're okay at this. Maybe we should try to institutionalize it. And that was the natural transition into Lattice.
Speaking of Lattice, tell us about Lattice. What does the firm look like? What do you guys do? I don't know if there's some overarching thesis that guides you and how you operate or what your focus areas are, but tell us more about the firm and strategy.
We're an early stage crypto venture fund. I think we tend to like strategy-wise in terms of what we're excited about is kind of two categories. I would say one is novel consumer businesses that can get a new audience excited about crypto and have a crypto-native business model. And then the second is infrastructure that kind of enables that first bucket of applications. In the first bucket of applications, I would put something like Layer 3, which is an investment out of our first fund. They've sort of built the largest distribution user acquisition platform in crypto. But it's like a crypto-native business model. People do these quests, they earn points. It's not really a great comparison for like what exists today in Web 2. In the second category of infrastructure, I would put something like Privy, which is an investment out of our second fund and just like makes it dramatically easier to onboard users into crypto. The overarching thesis is we think that market expanding opportunities are where there's going to be the most value captured venture lens. We tend to not like exchanges, crypto SaaS companies, games, anything that is A, like a very centralized business, or B, has a very traditional business model. We tend to think it's less exciting. And then I think strategically, structurally is the other way we differentiate ourselves, which is our funds are small. We partner with founders on day one, and that's all we want to do, which sounds incredibly simple, but I think it's actually very different from how most funds in the space operate. And so our view is really founders that A, we think have the tenacity and grit to work through multiple market cycles, we want to back them. And B, founders that we think are solving real problems gets us excited. That sounds super simple, but I think we very deeply try to understand from first principles. If someone is building infrastructure, for example, who are their customers? Is this a hair on fire problem? Really trying to understand why the founder is choosing to work on this and that this is actually like a really big problem for their customer set. That tends to kind of how the two overarching things we look at when we evaluate companies.
For Lattice, how big is the firm in terms of team size and what's the firm look like from that perspective?
We're 5 people full time. So me, my co-founder, Mike, we have an associate, Pierre, a COO, and an assistant. We've kept the team super small, and I think that's how we want to run it going forward. I think you look at most traditional venture funds, and they tend to be like pretty small operations. Maybe there's 2 to 6 investors. There's some operational staff that help the firm run. But I think it stands in stark contrast to a lot of crypto funds, which are 50 to 100 people. At the later stages, maybe that makes sense. Some kind of platform support team is valuable to founders. Our view is that day one, founders want to work with other founders. And so we think that gives us an edge. And I think the fund size you need to support a massive team precludes you from working with founders on day one. You need a large fund to support that. And so you need to write really large minimum checks. And so one of our overarching theses from day one was just most really good crypto funds had gotten too big to do true pre-seed and seed. And I think that's largely been correct. And so we just think this is the more interesting part of the market to play in.
Makes a ton of sense. I mean, if you have a fund of a certain size, it's just hard to do pre-seed deals and have it matter for your portfolio, even if it does really well. And so your partner or your co-founder, Mike, how do you guys know each other? How do you get doing this together?
Mike worked at CoinList with me. He joined about 6 months after I did. And we actually lived really close to each other in San Francisco. And so we'd hang out and then the first two things we started working on outside of CoinList together is one, we started doing some investing together. Mike had this idea to do like a crypto ski conference. He'd worked in like mobile ads before joining CoinList. And I think these junket trips were pretty common in that world. And lucky for him, people in crypto love these junket trips. But we really had this idea that every crypto conference is kind of the same. It'd be like some conference that no one would go to in Midtown Manhattan, and there'd be like a bunch of side events around. And everyone's just like trying to hang out and catch up with each other. So we're like, well, why don't we just strip out the first part? No one cares about programming, and just do it in an awesome place people are excited to go. So we organized the first Crypto Peaks in February 2020 up in Lake Tahoe, and we had about 50 people join. And it was awesome. A lot of people we met through that, Kyle Samani at Multicoin, ended up being incredibly helpful and supportive to us in the Lattice journey. And we just ran our fourth Crypto Peaks last month. And I think we've kind of built it into like one of the preeminent conferences in the space, at least for an investor set. So that was our trial run for working together on Lattice.
Okay, so all comes from conference organizing.
Yes, venture is better business, I have learned, than conference organizing.
Not surprised to hear that. It's a great event, so kudos to you guys for building that into what it is today. You're speaking a minute ago to the crypto space is a large space, and there's a lot to do. There is so much happening in crypto now. I mean, you only have so much time in the day. How do you avoid trying to keep track of everything and do too much and cover everything and, oh, I can't miss out on this or that? Actually stay focused on where you guys think you're best positioned to execute.
I think a lot of it is honestly just being authentic and trying to not cover everything. As an example, no one on the team is gamers. I like to play like Mario Kart with my wife, but like I don't play games. Why would we be good gaming investors? And it's not to say there's not good opportunities in gaming. I think that that could be a massive category in crypto, but it's not us. Covering Asia-based projects, going after Asian markets, I think is another example where none of us have lived in Asia, right? Like, what do we know about these markets? Maybe if we were like, okay, we're going to spend a year really deeply understanding them, maybe we could, but we aren't. So we tend to not do those projects. And then I think a lot of ecosystems, Aptos, Sui, Polkadot, we were never investors in the L1. We're not that familiar with what's going on in the ecosystem. I think it's impossible to cover everything in crypto, and you need to be honest about what's exciting to you. We've tried to shift more towards a research-driven model where each of us have a few categories where we're always writing, we're reading, and we're just trying to be like really close to the metal about what's happening. I think Mike has been the best out of any of us on the team, and starting in 2021, really started getting deep in the deep end space. And we invested in a company called Demo, which is building like a decentralized marketplace for mobility data. We probably did that investment in mid to late 21. Mike just got really into it. He organized the first DeepIn Summit in September of 21. And we've since made probably about half a dozen investments in that category. He's into it. I think he knows more than most people. Founders are excited to talk to him just because he has a track record. If you kind of figure out one, two, three categories where you can do that in, I think it's a much better strategy than just whatever. We'll do whatever comes across our plate.
We clearly need to find a way to narrow down the scope. Otherwise, you're going to go crazy trying to cover everything.
Crypto is really big now. I was grabbing coffee on Friday with someone who's really deep in NFTs, and I don't have a great sense of what's happening in the NFT space. What are the new collections? What are like the hot ordinals things? It's just impossible to cover everything. And so I think being honest about that can be really helpful.
I mean, consistent with what we've seen as well, where we're just seeing a lot more specialization over time due to that. And I think that'll likely continue, at least personally. So changing topics, you've recently been more active on social media. You've been putting out these like mega threads, which I've enjoyed reading, so appreciate that. Would actually love to go through some of those and just chat through in a bit more detail what you're talking about and your thoughts on some of the topics there. But before getting into that, you also, I think, had a tweet prior to all of that. It was basically saying, I think we're pretty good at what we do, but we're not good at being public about it or telling our story effectively. First off, why start being more active on social media? Is there some sort of strategy behind it? You get bored one day and, oh man, I'm going to write mega threads to kill time, or like, what's the reason for doing all this?
Those take me a few hours. So yeah. It is a good way to kill time. It is very intentional. In general, if I could do this job and be anonymous, I would. I have no interest in making us the center character of the story arc. That's not what VC should be, and it's not what we want to do. Whenever I speak to founders about how they put together their seed round, who they want to talk to, it's generally like there's a list of 5 to 15 funds where it's like, hey, I'm starting this thing in crypto. Let me just put together a list of the top seed funds, and that's who I want to talk to. And there's some funds that have done a really good job building the brand. Variant is an example, where they are probably on that list more times than not. And I think Lattice is on that list sometimes, but it's not on it as much as I want it to be. And so we made a very conscious effort earlier this year. We have a pretty good process on the investing side. I think we do a pretty good job of supporting companies. Really, the big thing to level up is just be more public about what you do and the brand. There's a pretty clear playbook. why do VCs go on all these podcasts? Because they want to get the brand out there. Why do VCs talk about their winners? Every investor in Eigenlayer is not going to shut up about Eigenlayer for the next 6 months because they want to associate themselves with their winners. I think I've found the art form that works for me, which is these 40 long, however long they are, tweet threads. I can kind of just ramble about how we're thinking about the market. And a lot of it is just based on conversations Mike and I have or we have internally. But really the goal is we want to be top of mind for early stage founders. And I also try to be authentic with how we talk about them. I think we're honest about the mistakes we make. One of our theses in starting the fund is founders will want to work with people who built companies in the space. It's not like I came in here from some massive venture fund and we had a ton of money and just like rode it on a silver horse. We spent a lot of time building companies in a space, which is really hard. And so I think being honest about our mistakes hopefully shows founders how I think we do authentically operate, which is just a huge amount of empathy and respect for what they do.
What is your Twitter handle for those who want to check all this stuff out firsthand?
It's just my first name, last name, Reganbozman.
Definitely recommend folks checking it out. But the Lattice brand that you're talking about, I guess if I had to distill a little of what you're just saying, it'd be we were founders. We understand what it's like to build something. We've been through that before. Help me to synthesize, what is the Lattice brand? What do you want people to think about when they think of Lattice as a capital partner and how you guys differentiate yourselves and why folks should want to work with you?
A lot of what we do at the fund was really born out of what Mike and I have spent the last 6 years doing, which is helping bring protocols to market and partnering with technical founders and kind of helping them commercialize their businesses. We help launch a lot of large layer one blockchains that exist today. Solana, Filecoin, there's a bunch where we worked really closely with those teams, helping them craft a narrative and really distilling down these technical architecture differences of this versus other layer one blockchains as an example, really distilling that down to, for like a lay audience to understand. In terms of commercializing protocols, crypto is very reflexive in business models. A lot of infrastructure companies are basically selling to other crypto companies. Mike brought in all the business that Coinless did in its first 4 years in operation. There's maybe 10 people on earth with the experience he has doing sales in crypto. We've worked really closely with a lot of our teams and, hey, here's the CRM we built internally. Here's who we know at each of these L2s as an example. We'll help you craft your sales pitch and how you do all of that. So it's really around everything on the go-to-market and growth side. We've been doing this for a long time. And I think we can bring a lot to the table in terms of helping companies. And then I think the second is just being empathetic and relatable. I've had multiple founders say, more honest with you guys than our other investors. And being a VC is so much easier than being a founder. Our attitude reflects that. We have a huge amount of respect for what the founders in the portfolio do. We're not there to bust kneecaps. We're there to support and try to guide people. And I think that just being honest and empathetic is honestly very different than how a lot of crypto venture funds operate.
Yeah, having sat in their shoes makes a big difference. Now we're going to move on to some of these tweet threads and maybe go through a little more detail here. So I think there's five recent ones. We're actually going to go through each of them. I'm not going to read off the whole thing, of course, but we're going to chat about them a bit. We're going to go in reverse chronological order here, just because that's the way that your Twitter feed reads. So that was easiest.
Nice.
First one's around expressing a view in crypto. The setup here was, one of the easiest ways to get wrecked in crypto is making the right directional bet, but placing the wrong wager. You can get wrecked by introducing embedded risks. You can get wrecked by trying to minimize downside risks and so on. So I guess first, can you just explain what you mean by that?
One thing I just learned over the past few years, some of this is just by like reading and seeing how other people operate. Some of it is based on mistakes we've made, is there's a massive amount of embedded risk in every single venture bet in crypto. Let's just ignore equity businesses for now and look at tokens. Generally, anytime you're doing a seed deal in crypto, you are A, like betting that tokens are a thing in 5 years and like they're not regulated away. And B, like you're betting that the crypto market grows from here because none of these businesses are like that interesting if the market stays static. But then beyond that, people tend to underestimate how many underlying bets they are making when they place a single bet. We use like Lido as an example. Let's say they were doing a seed round. You're betting that Lido obviously grows from here. Let's say it's the seed round. Let's just say it was a liquid staking protocol on Ethereum. So you're kind of betting that Ethereum maintains its market share. If you think the Ethereum market is going to shrink, you probably wouldn't bet that Lido would be a great business. And B, you're actually like betting that like investing in Lido is a better business than holding ETH because you've already underwritten that like the crypto market is going to grow or else you wouldn't be investing in the space. And B, you're betting that like Ethereum is going to maintain its market share because you're betting on not building on Ethereum, you're pretty explicitly actually taking like a long position on ETH. But you're choosing not to buy ETH. You're choosing to buy Lido. And you're choosing to accept a dramatically worse liquidity profile because of that. Because you could buy liquid ETH today. Whereas with Lido, let's just say it's like a 4-year lockup. That's like a pretty simple way to think about it. There's a lot of other investments that fit this profile. We made some mistakes, for example, in our first fund, investing in teams building on non-EVM ecosystems where like we didn't necessarily have a strong view on that ecosystem, but we really liked the team. Sometimes it works. The ecosystem grew and sometimes it didn't. And I've seen bad ecosystems destroy exceptional founders. You could be Elon Musk and you're building in Polkadot or Tezos. I don't think it matters. Your market is just very small. So that's kind of what I mean. I think just really trying to distill down exactly what view you have in the market and getting as close to the metal as you can on just taking that one singular bet. That's what you should be doing. I think another interesting example is like people kind of trying to take these index bets on NFTs as an example. Most venture funds didn't want to buy NFTs. They're kind of weird. It's like art. Is it really a venture investment? It's probably not software. And so a lot of people invested in a bunch of NFT infrastructure. And on the whole, those things have dramatically underperformed just holding a basket of NFTs. You did like the OpenSea or Blur seed rounds. You've done well. There's not that many other really big NFT infrastructure companies. I think it's just really trying to make a singular bet with every venture investment is how we try to think about it now.
There's two pieces. One is you clearly have to believe in the ecosystem if you're investing in someone who's building on that ecosystem, given the impact that'll have on them long term. Let's say you're investing in an application building on a certain blockchain, comparing the risk return of that investment versus the risk return of just buying whatever the base asset of that blockchain is. And I don't know, what's a good outcome for that seed round? Okay, you have some base return off that. If that plays out, what would the return be if you just held the base asset of that blockchain and making sure you're basically getting some sort of risk premium given the early stage, the additional risks, the liquidity or lack of liquidity you have in early stage investment. So do you think that's what VC should be doing for literally every investment to say, hey, they're building on X. Here's our base case. If that plays out, here's our base case for the base asset of X. Comparing those two and assuming there needs to be some sort of premium to do that deal?
We always joke internally that you can probably buy any crypto asset at the price you want. It's just a question of like how long you have to wait for that. Right? Let's just say you were like really long AVAX in like the last bull market. Unless you like genuinely thought that we were in a super cycle, probably at some point 2 years following that, it'd be pretty reasonable to bet that you could buy AVAX at a 75% discount to what you could have at that point in time. And if you had the view that we're doing this AVAX thing that's going to be locked for 4 years, you should have a 4 to 5 year view that this thing is going to go up. If you're able to buy the base asset 50, 75% below where it is today and be totally liquid, that may just be a better way to express that view. Now, I think that a lot of crypto VCs kind of have a interesting relationship with liquid tokens. And I think a lot of that is the LP side, which obviously you know better than I do. But a lot of crypto venture funds are structured that only 20% of what they do can be liquid tokens for like US regulatory reasons. And so some VCs have structural issues with just buying liquid tokens. For others, it's like we told our LPs this is a venture fund. If we're just buying a bunch of tokens, maybe they think it's not a venture fund. It's not that VCs are ignorant of this. They think that they should just do these seed deals because it kind of looks more like venture. But yes, to answer your question, 100%, you should be making that calculus every time.
Let's move on to the next thread here. So it's related to being contrarian and right versus just front-running the narrative. So this is an interesting one. One of the tweets here says, this brings us to the second major distinction between crypto and venture. What do crypto markets value? I'll give you a hint, it ain't cash flows. Crypto markets value attention. The setup of that thread was, it's widely accepted that the way to make money in VC is to be contrarian and right. This is absolutely false in crypto venture. All that matters is your ability to front run the narrative. For folks who are less familiar, can you just explain a little of what that means? And then I'm curious, if you believe that, how do you front run the narrative?
I think really the simplest way to just distill it is the only thing that matters valuation-wise in crypto, more or less, is eyeballs or attention, memetic potential, whatever you want to call it. You really need what you do to become consensus. And that's not true in venture. There's a thing called cash flows that are fungible across every company. And there's millions of investors around the world that value that thing. I could invest in a payment processing company for tractors in Southeast Arkansas. Not a sexy thing at all. But if that's throwing off $1 billion of free cash flow a year, there's a lot of investors that will pay for that. So I don't need that investment to become consensus. I just need it to like work. Go to crypto and it's these meme coins, which obviously have no cash flows, and these L1s, which are kind of valued on these like different things. And then there's the DeFi tokens, which are more valued on cash flows. They all trade on the same exchanges, the same protocols. I don't think there's like a universal theory of value in crypto because all of these assets that trade at wildly different valuation frameworks, they all trade on the same exchanges. And so really, I think if you distill down, why do things get valued the way they do? It's like attention. And so whenever you make a bet, you need to believe that that thing is going to get attention and eyeballs. If you're investing in this tractor company in Arkansas, as an example, there are hundreds of billions, probably trillions of dollars that just go into public markets because they have a mandate to buy stocks, and stocks get valued on free cash flow. There are buyers for what you are doing. In crypto, that's not the case. There's probably, for every like $10 allocated to crypto venture, maybe $1 allocated to liquid markets from like an institutional setting. So really, like, your terminal liquidity is like retail. Retail investors need to be excited about what you're doing, or else this thing is not going to do well. It's just like a very different thing than venture in that sense. And I think it took us a long time to learn it. But it's kind of the way these markets have operated. And for what it's worth, I think you can make the argument that that will change. The ETF is probably bringing in more institutional money. That money tends to value things like cash flows. But I think it's pretty clearly that this is the way these markets operate today.
So it sounds like a big piece of that too is not having institutional liquid asset purchasers the same way you have public equity markets, where you have all sorts of folks who buy public assets. And I guess it's a much larger probably pool of capital than are investing in private assets. And maybe I'm wrong these days given the growth in private markets, but do you think that changes once you have a more institutional level of public, or I should say listed token focused funds and more kind of institutional capital coming in? How do you feel about that?
I would think so. But I think a lot of people have gotten absolutely destroyed betting specifically that the institutional money is coming in, which is like a meme I've heard in every cycle. Hasn't happened yet. And B, at a higher level, going back to a conversation on embedded risks, you're making A, like a bet on a company and all of the risks underlying that. And B, you're betting on the capital market structures of crypto changing. That's a dangerous bet. Now, maybe you're right. On a long enough time frame, I think you are. Being early in this business is the same as being wrong. And so I don't know, that's a bet I would make, at least for this cycle. And for what it's worth, like, the markets, I think, are even moving in the opposite direction, where it's meme coins or what people want to trade. It's pretty clearly like the furthest thing away from cash flows you could do.
Very much. I guess, you know, the flip side of that, have you seen folks get in trouble trying to chase narratives and take a more aggressive stance on basically what you're alluding to? And especially if you're buying into illiquid assets, trying to chase narratives, if that changes, if the market cycle changes, you can suddenly find yourself in a very bad position. I guess, one, if you've seen that, and two, how do you balance trying to be ahead of the narratives versus the risks that that presents?
I don't know if I coined this term. I probably didn't. We call it narrative mirage internally. There have been so many narratives that people got excited about that have gone nowhere. So there was like security tokens in 2018. There was fair launches, there was yield farming, there was Polkadot, Tezos had like a little spring, Starkware had a big run up in terms of like project building on Starkware. And there's probably a bunch of others I'm forgetting. And some of these things actually kind of ended up being right, but too early. Security tokens have been branded real world assets. And now clearly like Ondo is on fire. If you're too early, you're wrong. And investing in a bunch of security token things in 2018 when that was hot would have been a great way to lose all your money. People tend to underestimate the timeline of these things. We invested our first fund basically like summer 21 to spring 22. So let's say we finished deploying that fund 2 years ago. We haven't really made very few new investments in the last 2 years. We have maybe 2% of the tokens will have liquid. It takes a long time if you're doing seed for these things to mature. And I am skeptical on anyone's ability to predict narratives 3 to 4 years out. It is a good way to lose your shirt trying to bet on narratives. And as an example, the AI narrative maybe has legs because there's external stimuli keeping it going. If you're doing a bunch of AI deals now at insane valuations, when are you going to have half your tokens? 3 years? 3.5 years? People may have moved on. It's totally possible. Maybe this GPU shortage is solved. I don't know. But there's a lot of things that could happen. I think you really just need to bet on, is this team going to still be here? Can they execute? Can they survive through these crazy markets? And you kind of just need to like hope or like think that there's enough there that the narrative can either fall onto them or they can insert themselves into whatever the narrative is at the time.
Let's keep going. So the next thread was around, I think, largely like apps versus infrastructure. And I'll set up the initial thread. Will applications finally have their day? Will cash flows ever matter in crypto? How many times can we run back the infra play? Reading through, I think the takeaway is one, the further you build down the stack, the bigger the valuations of market leaders. So if you compare the market, the valuations of DeFi apps versus middleware versus L2s versus L1s from top to bottom, the valuations, the market leaders increase as you go down. And then two, the market doesn't care about cash flows today, which we've already talked about a bit. So we can move on from that. But in particular, like the app versus infrastructure side of it, that takeaway, does that have any impact on how Lattice invests? The most extreme reaction to that would be, hey, let's just go build a portfolio of new L1s because theoretically those can have the biggest valuations. And I'm not saying that anyone should do that, but that would be the logical extreme, I guess.
That was by far the best strategy in the 2017 cycle. You would have been retired by now. And I think some people have. All of those things have done insanely well.
Yeah, and we've seen some good returns from some of those. But I guess moving forward, do you still think that holds? If you look at that historical evidence, clearly you guys aren't just investing in infrastructure. So you must not completely believe folks should be solely investing in infrastructure, I guess. But does that have any impact on how you guys invest and where you deploy capital?
Yes. There's just a few facts of this business that they may or may not be rational, but they're kind of how it works. These infra deals go out at high prices. The SUI seed round, let's just say, was it 300 or 400? It was somewhere in that ballpark. Is there like any rational way to justify that? Probably not. But like actually, clearly, it would have been a really good investment. They are now leading L1, and L1's trade at $5 to $25 billion fully diluted. And so if you invested 300, it doesn't really matter. You would have done well. We are happy to invest in stuff higher up the stack or in infrastructure. I think our view on stuff up the stack is that there needs to be like a crypto native value capture. So for example, like CyberConnect, which is an investment in our first fund, they're one of the largest crypto social protocols. They built a bunch of really cool stuff around smart wallets. I think they're actually like the largest deployer of smart wallets of any protocol today. They've done a lot of cool crypto native stuff. And I think the market values those types of value capture more than something that's more traditional. But I think what we're seeing is teams that have built some kind of proprietary distribution or brand starting to actually like vertically integrate and go down the stack and kind of rolling their own infrastructure. Blast was probably the first one where like the Blur team, they built the largest NFT marketplace and then they built their own L2 and they built native yield into it. Maybe they did some stuff on the tech side. It's not really why it's different. They built native yield into the protocol and they had this proprietary distribution because they have the largest NFT app. And now this is like the third largest L2. And CyberConnect recently announced they're going to roll their own L2 for social protocols. And they're definitely not going to be the last. I think that that's an interesting strategy. And I think that part of it is possible today because there's been so much money that has flowed into commoditizing this infrastructure. So now it is way easier to roll your own roll up or your own L2 than it was like 2 years ago. And so I think there we'll start to see some of these apps do much better and trade at much higher valuations because they're going down the stack.
It reminds me of why traditional, let's say a manufacturing company might integrate vertically where they're trying to effectively turn cost centers into sources of revenue. Maybe slightly different rationale, but I think conceptually similar to what you're describing. In the interest of time, let's keep going. I'm going to skip your fourth thread here again, just in the interest of time. So the first one you wrote was around mid-curving and meme coins. I guess it made me curious, are VCs actually buying meme coins? And what do you think about that?
Yes. I don't know how many. I'm a small LP in a few funds. Just I see in the updates, some of those funds have bought meme coins. And I think Joe McCann at Asymmetric has been pretty vocal about him buying Bonk. I have no firsthand knowledge into what percent of the fund is Bonk, but clearly he's done well on it. Meme coins are fun. I like to trade them. I think it's a really high risk bet to make as a venture fund. And the reason I think that is because if you are wrong, can you imagine trying to explain to like a foundation or something like, oh yeah, I lost a bunch of money because I bought this Joe Biden meme coin, but it's Joe Biden's name spelled wrong. And then a random Reddit user rugged us and there was like no liquidity to get out. Right. It's just like a terrible story. It makes you sound like an idiot.
Sounds like a fun conversation.
A lot of venture bets lose money, but there's generally like a reasonable story as to why they did. And it usually fits relatively neatly into how LPs think about venture bets. Look, I think clearly some funds have done well buying meme coins. And honestly, if you bought any meme coin 6 months ago, you would have made money. But pretty clearly, that's not going to be true forever. We have not done it out of Lattice. I don't think we will. It's not to say meme coins are bad or shouldn't exist. I just think that the timeline of venture funds and like the very unpredictable nature of meme coins makes it hard to do in a venture bucket.
We obviously see what a lot of funds are doing, and I'll be definitely curious to see if we see more of that going forward. I'm not making any predictions. It'd be interesting to watch that. So something else from that thread, it was effectively just talking about LPs getting a lot of capital calls recently as funds try to play catch up, as the bull market maybe caught certain folks off guard. And I think it's an interesting observation, but similarly was making me curious. You go through the bear market, it can be difficult to deploy capital at times. And then all of a sudden you're back in a bull market again. The change in sentiment can happen very quickly. How do you maintain conviction during the bear market and make sure you're continually deploying capital and that you're not caught off guard like that and don't get scared to deploy during the bear market as a venture fund?
It's hard. I remember a little over a year ago post FTX, it was just like, holy shit, we really did something bad. Not we as a fund, the industry. There's going to be a massive regulatory blowback. Will tokens like even be a thing in the US in a year? And I think it's really just taking the view that this stuff is going to work long term and there's going to be bumps along the way. And crypto has been a combination of financial innovation and technical innovation. The financial innovation gets us in trouble sometimes, but it's part of what makes the space so interesting. I think literally like the first ETH buy we made out of our current fund was 2 days after FTX. And it was really like, either this is going to work and ETH is going to be way more valuable in the future, or like we're going to need new jobs. But our LPs gave us money to capture alpha in crypto. Let's do that. And so we started deploying money in liquid markets after that. I wish we deployed more last year, right? I think as everybody else did, but I don't think it's irrational for GPs to have called a bunch of money earlier this quarter and deployed it. The way I kind of look at it is like, yeah, of course, the best thing is you deployed a bunch of money right before the markets ran up. But probably the second best thing is to like put money in at a higher price earlier in the cycle than to not have any market exposure at all. Now, again, that assumes that the cycle goes higher from here, and we'll see if that's true or not. I think aping into the markets earlier this quarter was actually a pretty rational thing to do.
I don't think I've heard from anyone who wished they'd deployed less during the bear market, for sure. And I think like another dynamic is just funds worry that if they deploy aggressively in a bull market and then they have to go back to market, are LPs going to deploy back into venture funds when sentiment is very poor? And I think LPs, by not being consistent, are actually shooting themselves in the foot, having to make their GPs worry about that because they force the GPs to worry about that, where they should just be focused on deploying and how do we generate the best return for this fund. GPs can't control that, obviously.
It was hard because like honestly, it's not like this drove our thinking, but definitely we were not in a position where we needed to raise money last year. But had we been, the markets were terrible. A lot of VCs that probably wanted to deploy money just couldn't. I have 20% of this fund left. I don't know when the LP markets are going to open again, but I need to conserve this. The best time for LPs to deploy is probably when the least number of them want to.
Definitely. You talked about a couple of your portfolio companies in passing as you're talking on various things. You mentioned Layer 3, Demo, CyberConnect. I might be missing others, but would love if you can just highlight maybe one other portfolio company that you guys are just kind of excited about, or someone who's doing something interesting, or good progress, or just one of your recent deals that you want to highlight, whatever you think makes sense.
We're super excited about Karate Combat. This is a super out there project, but these guys bought this karate league about 5 years ago. Think of it like a UFC competitor. And they introduced a token to govern the league a little over a year ago. And they also introduced this thing called up-only gaming, where essentially you can gamble your karate tokens on the outcome of fights, but you don't lose your principal. It's awesome. It's sports betting on crypto rails, except it's actually much more innovative than just, oh, this is like FanDuel, but you use USDC. I don't think it's that interesting. These guys have introduced a really novel way to get people bought into a league and to like participate in the upside and limited downside of betting on sports. And we're super excited. It's almost like a left curve bet. It's like sports betting, right? It's pretty adjacent to crypto, but the team has executed really well. They've started doing these crypto influencer fights at crypto conferences, which is pretty fun. They have a big announcement coming up for who they're going to have in the ring at Consensus.
They're doing a fight around Consensus in Austin?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Definitely would be me, because I would not do well in the ring.
Won't be you.
Yeah,
Bummer.
They have some big names. We just need more shots on goal, weird, novel things that people can do with crypto. This is one, and it's doing really well. We have now about 50,000 people using the up-only gaming app for every fight. It's like way higher than it was a year ago. Yeah, we're really excited, and I think they're kind of just getting started.
Interesting. Yeah, I like that. I don't know how it works, so I don't want to speak to the details, but that no loss or limited potential loss dynamic of it's kind of like pool together, but you know, apply to that space, which is really interesting. If you own these Karate Combat tokens, what do you actually have the ability to govern or vote on? What do you do?
So you can bet on fight cards and stuff like that. The governance stuff is admittedly somewhat nascent. The league itself runs a little bit more like a normal sports league. But they have a mobile app where like you can stream the fights and you can basically just bet on fight outcomes directly from the app. It's like an iPhone experience. There's no private keys, signing transactions, whatever. They did a very good job of abstracting it away.
That's interesting. Definitely not the average investment that we hear about. I appreciate that.
I'm sure, you know, everyone's like, oh, we have this new scaling solution for Ethereum and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's like, but can you fight with it? The last question I always ask everybody is, if crypto didn't exist anymore, if you couldn't work in tech, if you couldn't do venture capital, what would you do for a living to make money?
I think that Mike and I would do climate stuff, and especially around carbon credits. One of our very close friends does that for a living. And I think A, like it's important, but B, hearing him talk about the carbon credit stuff, I'm like, this sounds a lot like crypto. Things with amorphous value, you have opaque markets, it's very global, a lot of shysters. Mike and I have kind of joked, if this doesn't work out, we're just going to go try to do stuff with carbon credits.
I like it. Either help the world through crypto or you can save it through carbon credits, but either way, you're in a good spot.
I hope so.
Awesome. Well, yeah, this is a really fun conversation, so I appreciate you joining us, Regan. If folks want to follow you guys online or just keep tabs on what you're up to, where can they find you online? Yeah, you and Lattice.
Twitter is a great place. Just REGANBOZMAN. Yeah, Brooke, really appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Inside the Hut with your host, Brooke Pollock. You can find this and other episodes on any podcast player or at our website, www.hutcapital.com.